So, welcome back to the Morecambe and Grace podcast. The Men's Six Nations is over. Ireland have been crowned defending champions with their win over Scotland. Italy have done the double over Wales, and France quelled a second-half comeback from England. We're joined today, as always, by Ricky, and today by sports journalist and author of the new book, Red Roses, Behind the Scenes with the England Women's Rugby Team, Jessica Hayden. Welcome.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
So, to get started, well, let's look at this week's upcoming Women's Six Nations matches. Of course, you might be sad that the men's tournament is over, but the women's is just getting started. So, kicking it off with France versus Ireland at 2:15 tomorrow, how do we think that's going to pan out?
I think that's going to be a pretty comprehensive France win. Ireland have had a really poor preparation for this tournament. They won at WXV, and that's something that they should be applauded for, but I just don't think that was a proper challenge for them. It didn't give them the exposure to the physicality that the Six Nations will bring, especially a team like France. So, unfortunately, I don't think this is going to be a very good game for Ireland. Although, I have to say, they've brought in Scott Beamon, who was the England attack coach with the Red Roses, of course, helped them onto a first match winning streak. But I just don't think this is going to be a good tournament for Ireland, unfortunately. And France, again, not looking too strong. They're definitely not looking as strong as they were at the last Rugby World Cup. But I still think, you know, whereas Ireland might start quite fast, they do like to play a bit of unstructured rugby at the start of tournaments. Don't know if that will continue under Scott, but I'm predicting a France win for that one.
I think you probably are right on that. As you mentioned with the Celtic Challenge, it'll be really interesting to see how the teams integrate those players. And as you mentioned before, where Ireland using it as a tool for developing their stronger players, whereas Wales are using it more for their second team and developing that depth.
Yeah,
I think that'll be really interesting. And speaking of Wales, it's Wales-Scotland straight after at 4:45. What are our thoughts on that?
To me, that's a really exciting match. I think it's the match of the round. It's interesting because I think that's potentially the battle for third place. So I expect the leaderboard at the end would be England, France, and then either Wales or Scotland. I think that's really interesting because it kind of links into WXV qualification, World Cup qualification. So it's a tough one. I think Wales are going to have an amazing tournament because they have 12 Gloucester Hartbury players in their squad, and Gloucester Hartbury are just unbeatable this season. And I think that what we saw at the Men's World Cup, Men's Six Nations, sorry, is that a lot of the players who play at club together made the step up to international together, and it was really important in the moments that mattered. And I'm thinking like of how England kind of emptied their bench against Ireland with Harlequins players, and those relationships became really important on the pitch. And I think we'll see something quite similar with Wales versus Scotland, with the axes that they have across the pitch of players who play together week in, week out at Gloucester Hartbury, but also just giving them the experience of knowing what it's like to win and how to hold on to a match and keep the momentum going, keep your foot on the gas, because that's actually really difficult, that mindset in international rugby. It's something that players always say to me, is that they struggle with that kind of the shift from being a team that's losing to a team that's winning. It is actually quite hard, apparently. So, I think that Wales will have a great tournament. Although Scotland as well, I think they could be the underdogs. I think they'll have at least one big win in their locker. Don't think it's going to be against England or France, but could be against Wales.
Definitely. I think, as you mentioned, it's going to be really interesting seeing how that midfield plays out, because I think potentially all four teams besides England and Wales could be really battling out, but particularly Wales and Scotland. And finally, on to Italy versus England on Sunday at 3 p.m. Obviously, we've seen the England squad. It looks absolutely packed, even with all the players. It's been great to see, actually, where there's been so much debate in the comments saying, oh, this player should be starting, this player should be starting. And that's been wonderful to see. What are your thoughts on this? I assume probably an England win.
Yeah. I think it's going to be an England win because, you know, anything other than a Grand Slam for England is seen as a disappointment now, given their record. And they are, you know, a level above Italy. However, Italy always have And they have this unstructured way they play. They're very you never know what they're going to do when they have the ball in hand, especially their backs. You just don't know where they're going to go. And I think that makes them really exciting. And I remember in last year's Women's Six Nations, Italy came out firing, and for a while England weren't sure what to do with it. And Italy kept making breaks through England's lines and scoring tries. And yeah, so it can be quite an unpredictable game. But what always happens is they start off like that, and it's amazing at the start. There's back-to-back tries, and then by the second half, England come firing and they empty their bench, which is of course a lot stronger. They have all that strength and depth, and win it. So I think that's what will happen this time. But what I would say on that game is it's the first time we really get to see John Mitchell put his identity on this squad. It's essentially his first game in charge, because yes, he came in to WXV, but he was very much in the background while Lewis Deacon was looking after the squad and being kind of the interim head coach there. So this is the first time we get to see his change philosophy, and I can tell you from the camp, it's a huge change. There's so much stuff that we'll see that will be exciting. Expect to see the forwards and backs competing as one unit. Expect to see a wide variety of how they score tries. Expect to see forwards kicking. Just expect to see a lot of stuff that we haven't seen from England before. And I think, yeah, it'll be exciting to see that, even if we know if we could almost guarantee they'll win the Six Nations, because they always seem to do that, and they're a level above their competitors at the moment still. At least what's exciting about watching England is this new identity.
I think definitely that new identity will be something to watch out for. I think it's interesting, as I mentioned, about England being absolutely packed with so much talent. But we're seeing that come through in the PWR with Italy. We've got the likes of Silvia Torani turning out for Harlequins every week. I think she could be the sort of player that Italy really look to and build their team around because of the experience that she has.
Yeah, Torani's been one of the standout players for Harlequins this season, I think. Yeah, you're absolutely right. In that squad as well, in Harlequins, she's had some real challenges, really challenging matches. They haven't had front football much at all season. And what she's been so good at is creating those opportunities from nothing. So I think that's what she'll be able to offer. And also, knowing the players, having played with them week in, week out, played against them, that does help when facing a team like England.
And finally, on England, there's one thing I wanted to touch on because we've seen this week England with the Red Roses, they've branched out and actually created their own social media accounts.
Yeah.
And they've really been pushing for that, almost taking on the Lionesses effect. What do you see with that, particularly with looking ahead to the Ireland match at Twickenham, where they're looking to get a really decent crowd out?
Yeah, it's a great question. They're doing this, they're basing it on the Arsenal model, which I think is really clever. In basically, you know how Arsenal women are the most successful women's sports team in the UK. They are doing incredible things. They have sold out stadiums, they really focus on data, which means they have so much information about their fans, which means they can market to them really well. So if there's any model to follow, Arsenal should be the one. And essentially, what they do with social media is Arsenal women have their very own separate identity, and the Arsenal men's account then retweet them for the best things. They quote tweet them when there's something interesting going on. It's that kind of thing. So that's what the Red Roses are going for. And I think that's really good. Really pleased that they have their own account now. Already you can see their identity coming through a bit. You're seeing a lot more content from them, which is great. And also, I think it just helps them build that identity towards the Ireland match, which of course, 20th of April at Twickenham. And building towards that is really important, but it's also just part of a wider picture and a wider journey towards the Home World Cup in 2025. And actually, having their own identity now, I think, will help them build a fan base that's just for them, like the Lionesses did. We're all about that Lionesses effect, right?
We'll move on to the fantasy section now. So every week we'll pick a player each and we'll put it up on the socials as to who we will have in our fantasy squad, who we think will be the star player of the round. I've had a few rogue choices in the men's Six Nations and my fantasy team didn't really pan out the way I hoped. I went a bit ambitious. But Ricky, who's your fantasy pick this week? As if I need to
Oh,
guess.
it's going to be Abby Dow every week, mate. There's no question about it. I've had the pleasure of watching her play for Ealing this whole season when I've been working there. She's just a joy to watch. I know she's 20 stars and it's not a bold choice or anything, but it's got to be Abidal. What about you?
So my choice this week, I think there's only one person for it. On our 100th cap, it has to be Marley Packer. As much as I can't help but not want to give Saracens players the credit, she has been the guiding light for England for so long. As the captain, she rightfully deserves that 100th cap. And who'd you pick then, Jess?
Well, I was just thinking about how many tries Marley Packer scored in last year's tournament. It was a crazy number. So I feel like you've got a really good pick there. She's like a definite captain, I feel, for this round. So I think my choice will be Gabrielle Vernier, the French centre, inside centre. However, I would say that if anyone else listening, like who you'd pick, I would really encourage you to think about who's going to score tries for England this week. And it's not, I don't think it's going to be a front row player. I think they're going to really move away from their kind of more driving more tactics because they're very big now on like the whole team scoring tries. So I would be looking at, yeah, second row, back row, and centres for scoring tries. I think based on how I've kind of seen them, I think that's how they're going to be scoring their tries. That'd be my kind of inside information, insight. But I'm going to go for Vernier because she's on amazing form. She's a really great player, always finding the lines that matter. And what she's really good at is she's not a selfish player at all, so she'll get quite a lot of try assists. But also I just think she'll be really, really great for them this week.
We had the pleasure of being at your book launch last night, and it was a fantastic event. Obviously, you had some great
Really was.
speakers there. We wanted to know, what was your inspiration for writing a book on the Red Roses?
Well, firstly, thank you so much for being there. It was lovely to meet you last night, and it was fun for me to have so many people who love women's rugby in the room. The inspiration for writing the book was genuinely just the players. I was working on the ITV documentary Where the Rose, which was about the England women's rugby team going into the 21 World Cup, which was played in 2022. And as I was kind of getting that access to the players, being in camp with them a lot, I just thought there's an extended cut of this documentary in a book. I thought it'd be a brilliant idea, and I had it in the back of my mind. And then I got a DM on Twitter from my lovely book agent Mel, and I didn't have a book agent at the time, didn't know her, but she just messaged me and said, have you ever thought about writing a book? Because I have a publisher that would be really interested. So I reached out. I was like, absolutely, I've been thinking about it myself. Like, please, let's do this. And very quickly we got the book deal, but then it was kind of reliant on England winning the World Cup. And so when they lost the World Cup, it was the realization that I'd also lost my book deal. But then thankfully, Arena Sport Berlin, my publisher, thought there's still a story here, and actually losing the World Cup was potentially more interesting than winning the World Cup for England. So yeah, that was the inspiration. The players were fantastic. The players always kind of made me think there are stories here. No one's boring in that camp. Everyone has such an interesting backstory, which I think also kind of provided that inspiration that this needs to be a book and this needs to be written down.
I think what has been so great, as you mentioned, where everyone's got a story with the Red Roses, where they have been promoting the individuality of all the players.
Yeah.
So, Rick, do you have any, what you said you had a
I
question as
do.
well?
One of the great things I picked up on yesterday was that you talk about concussion in your book.
Yeah.
You talk about the differences in the male and female neurological pathways. Could you just go a bit more into that and what kind of changes do you think need to be implemented going forward?
Yeah, of course. So concussion is, of course, a really important topic, and it's something that I didn't want to shy away from in the book. And it's part of that thing I was talking about last night, that this is a journalistic book. This isn't a PR piece, and concussion was really important to talk about. So how concussion normally works, and I'm obviously not a doctor, but I do a lot of research into concussion. I've spoken to a lot of researchers about this. There are two main reasons why women are affected by concussion potentially worse. The symptoms can be worse and the long-term effects can be worse. One of those is that we're more susceptible, and that's because if you think about your necks, women have smaller necks than men. And if you're a man, you put your hands around your neck, you normally can't match up your fingers, whereas women very easily can. Mine overlap of so like my neck's quite small, which means that my head is less supported. So when I go into a tackle, I'm much more likely to have a whiplash motion where my head moves back really fast, which is the main way that women sustain concussions. Whereas in men, concussions, they're able to control their head more. You see cyclists fall off bikes at speed, men cyclists, and they land with their head not on the floor because they've been able to keep their head up. Whereas for women, that would be almost impossible. The next thing is really interesting, actually, because the strongest kind of bodybuilder woman, her neck is on par with a weaker man. That's the difference. It's a huge, huge difference, which can't be completely overruled by training. So that's one way. The other thing that was interesting that I was talking about last night was how a man's brain has nine neuron pathways, whereas women's brains have two. And when you're concussed, one of those pathways is often, cut out, at least one pathway. And if you think about it as like a motorway, if you had a nine-lane motorway and one of them was, closed, then there wouldn't be that much of an effect on the brain. Whereas for women, if one of those is closed, then it's a huge effect. So, I mean, I've been concussed a few times. One of the times I had a seizure from being concussed and was in hospital for weeks and was really, really unwell with it. Had to use a Zimmer frame to be walking again. I had a really bad concussion. And I realized then that was, the difference. When I was saying I was concussed, the symptoms were just so different to men's. I actually didn't have any memory issues at all. I knew where I was. I wasn't confused. I was able to get myself to hospital because I knew there was something not right because I just could not stop crying. And that is a sign because that's the first response to concussion in women. It tends to be emotion, and that's because of the pathways in the brain and nothing else. So, yeah, it's important to me to talk about it because it's something I've experienced and I'm very kind of aware of the long-term effects of concussion and what that could mean for many players in the future, especially the players who played in I'd say the pre-professional era, people like Kat Merchant, who I talk about in my book, who suffered some horrendous concussions. So yeah, they're the main differences. It's symptoms and how we sustain concussions. They're the main two differences. And I think what we need to do is just try and get as much research as possible to better understand how it affects women differently, improve the diagnostic tools for concussion for women, and then make sure that the players are fully supported after retirement because that's where it gets really tough for them.
Another thing that was mentioned yesterday as well was actually, and we're quite wary about not wanting to compare men's and women's sports too much, but actually that being a useful tool in terms of coaching, where women's teams have to be coached differently in some ways. And you said that, when you first heard it, you weren't a fan and you thought, it's a bit contrived. And then the more coaches you got talking to, the more they were just saying the same thing, and you actually thought they've got a point. So could you talk a little bit more about that, please?
You're so right as well. I definitely thought they were just being sexist at first when coaches were saying to me, when you coach men, you can tell them to run into a tackle pad 10 times and they'll just say, okay. Whereas if you ask a woman to do that, they'll ask why. And I thought, oh, that sounds, typical, oh, that's how women behave. Ugh. Actually, every single coach educator, everyone said it. And I was actually annoyed at how it must be right because they're all saying the same thing. Every single England head coach I spoke to said it. Every single coach educator, PWR coaches as well. I was having like informal chats with lots of the coaches at the PWR launch and saying, oh, is this right? Like, what would you say is the biggest difference? And they all said, it's the why. It's having to explain the why. So yeah, that's a big difference. I think it's about players want to be involved more in the setup, in the how the game's being managed, in the women's game and the men's game. So I think that's part of it. And I think it's also about the history of women's rugby and how often they had to advocate for themselves. And still the players in the England squad now, probably spent at least a good chunk of their career having to, coach themselves at club or help themselves get to a higher standard, which they now obviously that won't be a thing in the future. But it's an interesting thing, right? The why. And I wondered if you, yeah, do you understand that? Did you if you played rugby, I don't know if you either of you played rugby. If a coach said to you, run into 10 tackle bags, would you ever ask why?
No,
See,
obviously.
I would.
I feel like I would, in the back of my head, think why, but I wouldn't necessarily say why. But
I don't
then
know
I've
what it
always.
is in me. Like, I've been raised to, like, if senior authority, I'd be like, just do that. And then obviously have a few questions in the back of my head, but just, I don't know.
But I've always sort of been that player that when everyone's getting all like G'd up before a game, sort of smacking each other about and just thinking like, why are you hitting me? Like, what's that for? Like,
We're about to get hurt.
you've just taken me out the moment now.
Oh, and I just want to say as well, it was interesting. They say other things. I remember I was talking to one of the England coaches. I can't remember which one said this actually, and he said one of the biggest learning curves is that you can't just walk into the changing room. He's so used to with the men just walking in at half time or after the match or before the match to have a chat, and he quickly realized one day that that was not the right thing to do. So that's the other big difference.
I suppose I wonder how that differs if you've got mixed gender coaching teams as well. So even if you've got women coaching on a men's team. So I thought one of the great speakers you had last night was Sue Dorrington. It was really interesting to hear her story and sort of hear about the 1991 World Cup and everything about that. How did you find sort of speaking to people about your book, and how did you find the reception that you got?
Well, I have to say everyone was brilliant in letting me talk to them, and my favorite one was Jill Burns. I went up to see her house, former Red Rose and really important person still in rugby, and I wanted to meet her, so I said, oh, can I come and visit you? She lives up by Liverpool. And she said, yeah, come round. So I went round to her house and it was incredible. She had these piles of scrapbooks with newspaper clippings, photos from the rugby in the 80s and 90s, England rugby, loads of stuff like that, tickets to matches, match day programs, anything you could imagine. It really was like a England Women's Rugby Museum, which is exactly what I needed to see. So it was things like that that were fantastic. Gary Street as well, the 2014 England Women's Rugby head coach, obviously won the World Cup with them. He was really good, let me into his home a week before the major operation he had, which unfortunately didn't go as well as we'd all hoped. But I was really proud that I'd spoken to him and been able to share so many of his stories before. Now he is struggling to talk, unfortunately, and struggling to communicate. So we have those stories written down and I'm really pleased with that. So the reception from players was great. They let me talk to them. All the former coaches and current coaches were fine. John Mitchell was a difficult one. That's the only one. I really could not get him to talk to me because I think being a New Zealander coming from the men's game, I think he saw a journalist wanting to write a book about a squad that had just lost the World Cup as, almost like a bird of prey circling, trying to be a vulture on their team. So I struggled with him. I could not get him to talk to me. I'd offered him so much. I was like, look, I'll send you the questions in advance. I'll send you what I've written up and you can edit it afterwards. The only person I offered that to, because I just really wanted him to be in the book, but we couldn't get it to work. And then I saw him the other day and he was like, love the book. And I was like, well, you could have been a part of it, John. But so he was the only one I struggled with. But I kind of understood that. I just wish he would have picked up the phone so that he could have understood it a bit better. But everyone else was very happy to be included.
You talk of the understanding, and you mentioned last night about being in that communication with some of the Red Roses players and being able to share those chapters and sort of say, what do you think of this? That was quite a nice thing to hear.
When I was saying about Poppy Cleal
Yeah.
and Oh yeah, so yeah, I went to the World Cup, the Men's World Cup for work with Poppy, Cleo, and Connie Powell, and the book hadn't been published yet. I just finished writing it, and yeah, and I showed them some chapters or just some pages. I was like, I'll read this. This is about you. I thought you liked this. I didn't show Poppy the bit where I was saying about when she interrupted an interview, and it was really annoying. But I thought she, I put that in the book because she was interrogating me while I was interviewing her about nutrition because she was certain I knew who the New England head coach was, and at the time I actually didn't. I knew who's been interviewed, but I didn't know who'd got it. And I was like, I'm not telling you anything, Poppy. And every time I'd ask her a question, I'd say like, so what's the, tell me about this, what it's like at mealtime. And then she'd just like say names at me and see what my reaction is. So yeah, I did include that. I don't know if she's read that bit yet, but she sent me a photo yesterday of all the books in camp. And that really made me happy to see players reading it, hopefully enjoying it. The feedback from players has been great so far. And I think that's mainly because they just wanted to be written into the history books and make sure their stories are there. So yeah, so far, so positive. And I hope it stays that way. I think that, there are a couple of people who won't be too happy with how they come out in the book. But that's fair. It's fair and honest. And as long as it's fair and honest, that's all I care about.
You've of course mentioned that you don't want to be a PR person. You are doing that journalistic side of it, so I think that's
Yeah.
a really important thing.
In your so you obviously worked at the Times before, and then you moved to contested dirt. How come you made that move? Was it just a change in career or incentive or something like that? I don't know.
So yeah, good question. I love being at the Times, and obviously it's like one of the biggest newspapers in the world, and the sports section is so good, especially the rugby side of things. But I knew that I wanted to work somewhere that was a bit more diverse and where I could be able to talk a lot more about the things that matter to me, and that's of course women's rugby. And I was finding that I just wasn't getting the opportunities at the Times to write as much as I wanted to. So I wanted to, I kind of knew it was time to move on anyway, but Contested just so happened to be the absolute perfect match because I've been working with them for a year. Contested is a sports app for anyone who hasn't downloaded it. I'd really recommend it. It is so much fun, where you can predict things that are going to happen in sports. We had one the other day that was Zoe Harrison kicks a crossfield kick, Jess Breach catches it, scores a try, and it came right. And we had one that's like Serena Wiegmann's going to take off her coat in the 86th minute. That one wasn't right. But it means that you can predict anything on the app. There's no money involved. It's not like gambling at all in that sense. It's just, do you know more about sport than your friends? Like, if you think about fantasy rugby, it's like that plus everything else, because you can predict not only who you think is going to score tries, you could, because you write all the predictions yourself, you're not kind of limited to what you can predict will happen. And yeah, if you're correct, you get more points. And at the end of the week, then you can, categorically say that you know more about sport than your friends. So it was their mission that really inspired me. So I was working with them as a consultant for about a year before I joined them, and the founders are two men that really care about women's rugby. So they funded WASC Women's Kit when they were having financial difficulties, and we sponsored Trailfinders Women in their opening season in the PWR. And so they're quite big on kind of putting their money where their mouths are and supporting women's rugby players. We've got some really exciting columnists for the Women's Six Nations with Clee Maloney, Sarah Byrne, and Poppy Cleal. So yeah, it's exciting. I'm loving it. We're really focused on women's rugby. We're kind of launching in that space. So yeah, it's a really perfect match for me that just so happened to come at the perfect time.
So you mentioned about having really good response from players and coaches on your book. How have you found the response from the public and with interactions on Twitter or on social media or anything? Everything that I've seen so far has been unanimously positive. So just how have you found that?
Yeah, it was a funny one. I had it in my head that, everyone was going to hate it and people were going to say it's the worst thing ever written, all that, because it imposter syndrome. And I have been blown away by how positive people have been about it, and that people I don't know, obviously, like my mum's going to think it's good, but instead it's just people who I don't know who are messaging me. I'm in a Facebook group for rugby books, and someone posted it there and said how much they enjoyed it, and then I saw someone else commenting to say, "Oh, I've read it too. I really enjoyed it." And that's amazing to me. I can't believe that people I don't know want to read it. It's been a bit of a it's been a bit overwhelming, if I'm honest. It's difficult to think about it, and yeah, I get very shy talking about what people think about it. But the Amazon reviews have been really positive so far, and I was on TalkSport the other yesterday morning, and they made it their sports book of the week, which was just, I could not believe it. I mean, you think TalkSport, they'd pick a football book, but they chose a women's rugby book for sports book of the week, which just means more to me than the personal achievement of being sports book of the week. You know, they've given women's rugby that platform. So far really happy. I'm pleased there haven't been any kind of big negative reviews yet, because I think I just, it's such a personal thing writing a book. I think I'd really hate that, but I'm sure it will come. There's definitely, no one can love, it can't be that a book, there can't be a book that everyone loves. So I'm sure I will have a negative review soon, but so far I've just been really happy with the reception.
I think it's definitely been great seeing everyone get behind you and get behind the book and sort of showing what it means to the players and to the community around women's rugby, particularly in England. So we just want to thank you for coming on today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you
Oh,
so much.
thank you so much. Yeah, no, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it. It was, as I say, it was lovely to meet you guys yesterday, and it just showed how kind of connected you are to the rugby space, that you were there and chatting to lots of women's rugby people. So thank you very much.
It's been wonderful having Jessica Hayden join us today. Her book is available for £15.75 on Amazon. We really look forward to this opening round of the Women's Six Nations. I've been Henry, I've been joined by Ricky and Jess, and this has been The More From Grace. See you next week.